What's going on, everybody? This is episode 135 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by Sean. Sean, how's it going, man?
Pretty good, but I mean, I think the real question here that we have to be asking is, like, how can the Devils be more consistent for 60 minutes?
Yeah, they really got to start being consistent and winning games. Hey?
Yeah. Come on, they've only won 9 straight games. Like, how are they going to ever find a way to close out more games?
Yeah, and they won again against Montreal in a resounding 5-1 victory tonight.
Does that make 10 straight now?
I think so.
I don't know if this is updated yet.
Jack Hughes with that all-time answer. Just,
I mean, we're on a 9-game good year. I'd say we're doing okay.
Yeah. What a dumb question.
Right? That's like someone who doesn't actually, who just got sent on a random assignment and just has like a bunch of stock questions or something. They just like pulled a question out of a hat.
Yeah. That'd be a tough situation to be put in, but at least you could do a little bit of homework and see the team's record.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, you know, reword it so it's like, you know, what are you guys doing to close out these games? Or what's working, like, you know, what's working to keep the effort up for 60 minutes? Like, you can reword it and ask the same question, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Team that's on a 9-game winning streak. Hey, how are you guys looking to improve right now?
Yeah.
No particular area.
We'd like to start losing some. We don't want to get too far ahead here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they lose a bunch in a row, then they win a bunch in a row. You guys aren't very consistent. Pick one. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of inconsistent, that's probably a good segue for our first topic of the day. You're the resident Oilers fan, so we'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, so, I mean, over the offseason, there was, you know, the huge deal of Edmonton needing to find a starting goalie, so they go and give Jack Campbell a 5x5 contract. I was hopeful for it. I was hoping that it would work, but I was also very, very hesitant and trying to be realistic about it. That I think Jack Campbell had like 130 games of NHL experience at the time, and he had, in his career, he had like one good half season at the beginning of last year in Toronto. And the rest of his career, he's been like average or very streaky at best. And sure enough, I mean, he had a good half season last year, and then he sucked the last few months. He was like, he was not very good, and, sure enough, start the season. I mean, first game, gives up two early goals against Vancouver, like in the first 5-6 minutes of the game. And that same trend has continued all season so far, where he's got terrible numbers. Like, I'm just bringing them up here. You know, 4.27 goals against average, 8.73 save percentage through 10 games. Negative 10.1 goals saved above average. That's like one of the worst in the league. And he's not been good. Somehow he has a 6-4 record, but I think that's a testament to the Oilers actually being solid up in front of him and like scoring a lot of goals.
Yeah.
But you know, it on the same, you know, the flip side of the same token here, like Stuart Skinner, we were all like Oilers fans, we were all super hyped to get this guy in the net last season. We wanted him to take over the crease last year, but he was stuck behind Koskinen and Smith. So this year, he finally gets his chance. He's finally going to be, like, the backup. And he is doing amazing. Like, he's putting up numbers that, other than the record, his save percentage, 932, goals against average, 253, 6.6 goals saved above average. Like, he's putting up numbers that are similar to other goalies who have been nominated for the Calder Trophy recently through his first 7 games. He's keeping the team in games, and you know, it's kind of hitting a tipping point here where you've got your clear starter on the roster on paper being Jack Campbell, because you're paying him $5 million a year, but you kind of start having to look at the team's performance, give your team the best chance to win, and ride the hot hand with Skinner. And suddenly you've got $5 million backup goalie playing behind Stuart Skinner's like $950,000 or whatever. But you know, it's kind of hitting a point where Skinner's got to take over the crease for the Oilers, because he's been by far the better goalie.
Yeah. Yeah, and play Campbell in more selective games and allow him to find his game a bit. I mean, I haven't watched every single game for the Oilers, but, like, how much of it is, like, stronger opponent, weaker opponent? Does that come into it at all?
I mean, Skinner
Campbell
just
against, like, the harder teams, or
Skinner just held the Oilers and got them a win against Florida, making like 40-some saves against the Panthers. Yeah. So, you know, I'm just going to bring up Skinner's last five games here. You know, win against the Panthers. They lost that game against Washington. I think the team didn't play very well. That game against New Jersey, he played against them beginning of the month. They were winning, but they lost at the very last minute because the defense gave up two really god-awful chances. And then a win against Calgary and a win against St. Louis. And this was, I think, slightly before St. Louis's, like, 20-game losing streak. So,
yeah, and if you
Skinner's,
look at Jack Campbell, he's like, you know, he gave up seven against Carolina. It was a good team, but seven is obviously a lot. He had a good game against Tampa Bay, where he saved 35 of 37. But then he gave up six against Dallas in a loss. He gave up four to Nashville, who doesn't score a lot of goals, in a game that the Oilers won 7-4. So like you said, it's kind of more testament to the offense that the Oilers can kind of overcome some of the goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he let up five against Chicago, played good against the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's just like, a little inconsistency, right?
Yep.
It's just that's the key word. And then, yeah, with a goalie with, you know, limited experience in the NHL, really, like, and, you know, he's the same age as me, so he's not like a up-and-coming goalie. Like, this is who he is, right? Like,
yeah. At a certain
it's not
going to
be a
like
massive, like, progression forward in his game from this point,
yeah,
right?
Not too many people are Tim Thomas where they hit like 31 and suddenly become an elite goalie.
No, like the statistical norm is to, you know, for goalies, like this is probably around like peak performance age,
yeah,
and then maybe get a little bit worse. And there's some freaks that play until they're like 40 or beyond 40, but
few and far between.
You know, this is kind of, he's just like a yeoman kind of type goalie who's journeyman around the league, and, you know, someone gave him a long-term deal. And it's like, if you look at some of the other deals in the offseason, like, you know, Capitals signed Darcy Kemper to basically the same contract. And,
yep,
you know, Kemper has been good. I'd say he's better than Campbell this season, but his numbers aren't crazy good. Like, he just gave up like four in the first period against Tampa a couple days ago. But, you know, he's looked better, but he's a bit more established. You know, he's looked good on, like, Arizona,
yeah,
teams that were just god-awful.
Well, yeah, so there was that one about year and a half where Darcy Kemper was, like, the best goalie in the league statistically.
Yeah, if you ask Tyson Nash, he probably still is, right?
but I hate having to agree with Tyson Nash, but, yeah, there was a stretch where Kemper was, like, the best goalie in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he plays in Arizona, so like there's less eyes on him, and probably,
yeah, no,
you know,
really
you could probably make knew. You could probably go back and dig through the numbers and make a legitimate, you know, argument that he was snubbed. But, you know, he's looked okay, but like the Capitals suck this season, and there's no way around that. But, you know, in Edmonton tradition, you have to have a starting goalie who lets in the first shot. That's just how it is.
I mean, this dates all the way back to like early Cam Talbot, like 7 years ago. I don't get it. I don't know how you can go through so many players, teams, goalies, coaches, GMs, and this exact thing is still an issue. And it's like, is the goalie coach the same? Because there might be like one final like consistent like consistency between all of them, the common denominator.
Yeah, it's hindsight 2020, but it's like, you know, you look at like Husso and how he's doing in Detroit. He's had, I think, a couple of shutouts, I believe, and
mm-hmm.
he's looked very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about what maybe more of a 1A, 1B type of situation would have looked like for them with, you know, Rock and Husso and Skinner. But
yeah,
you come into the season, you might not have a lot of faith in Skinner. And then turns out, you know, you should have maybe placed a bit more in him. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you think that's the likely outcome, is that Skinner steals the net and then you have a overpaid backup at this point?
If I was in charge of the roster decisions, yes. Because, like, quite frankly, this is the competitive window for the Oilers right now. You can't just play someone who makes a lot of money because they make a lot of money more than your backup. You know, you have to put pride aside and be like, okay, this is going to give our team the best chance to win. Like, you're sitting fourth in division right now. You're in a wild card spot, and you know third and second are still within reach right now. You have to win those games.
And to kind of cement that point a bit, like there's been teams that have won Stanley Cups very recently with a more expensive guy on the bench as a backup. You know, St. Louis did it. Pittsburgh did it a couple of times.
Yeah.
you know. A young goalie coming in and kind of playing better and
taking over and
stealing the spot,
the
crease. So it's not unheard of. And, you know, it's not as egregious as a case of like Chris Driedger versus Bobrovsky that 1 year where Bobrovsky played shitty. I think it was his first season in Florida.
It was. I remember us like trashing the Panthers for that move.
And it's
for
like
a while.
$10 million versus like $700K.
Yeah.
It's not quite as bad as that, but you know, it's not ideal because you could theoretically be using that money in a different space.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, hindsight, like you just said, hindsight's 20/20. Like I wasn't particularly high on Villahuso as an option because of how limited experience he was, like even less than Campbell. So I didn't think the Oilers should sign him because it's like he had 20 good games to take over for Binnington when he was not doing well. And then you don't want to go and give him a long-term big money deal for, you know, a tandem of a combined 35 NHL games.
Yeah, could go horribly wrong.
Obviously that, you know, is the early indications are that would have been the better option. But
still early.
It's still early. And, you know, the hope is that, you know, give Campbell some time on the bench, give Campbell some time with the coaches, with practices, with, you know, time to settle in with the team, give the team in front of him a chance to settle down their game because the Oilers have not been good defensively. They've been giving up a lot of chances. Their penalty kill is atrocious, and that's really costing them a lot of chances against, a lot of goals against. But it's just, you know, Skinner's on his game right now, so he's able to save them a little bit more than Campbell is.
Yeah, and that's ultimately a good thing to have a goalie who can step into the role while your other guy kind of figures it out. But yeah, you know, new goalie coach, new systems, might take a little bit of time for him to settle in. But yeah, I mean, like, he's a nice guy, and I hope he turns it around because he is just such a good person. But yeah, it's not looking great so far, and he's interviews I've seen, he's extremely hard on himself, Jack Campbell. So
yeah,
it's tough to see a guy, you know, going through that. But I mean, the good news is that Oilers are still winning some games. You know, the ability to win those games might have been slightly reduced with, you know, as we talked about in the last episode, with no Evander Kane. So they might not be able to put up like 7 goals to overcome, you know, letting in the first 3 shots or whatever, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, they're not the only team dealing with, you know, some goaltending issues. I think we mentioned it too, but, like, scoring's just been up overall. And the save percentages of most goalies have been just absolutely trash. Like, I think before the last game, Vasilevsky's save percentage was, like, .901 on the season, which is,
like,
like,
For him, like, that's terrible.
It's real bad, yeah. So, pretty crazy. Yeah, I mean, hopefully the Oilers kind of figure it out a bit, but you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, they're luckily still in a wild card spot, but, you know, things can change very quickly when they're only like a point up on Colorado and 2 points up on Calgary for that same spot. Or wait. There are 2 points up on Minnesota. That's who is in close to the other wild card spot. Colorado's got the divisional spot with less points. That's something I never thought I'd say for a while, is that the Pacific Division playoff teams have more points than the Central Division playoff teams. Edmonton in fourth in the Pacific has more points than Colorado in third in the Central.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Pacific was just kind of beat down coming into this season, just how weak it was going to be. I think the games played might be slightly skewed in the Pacific's favor right now, but
yes, big time actually. now that you mentioned that, big time. There's a few games in hand in the Central per team.
But yeah, I mean, like, the Central is just kind of all over the place. Like, it's the standings on that one are just keep flip flopping all over the place, and hard to kind of follow. There's some kind of surprises in there.
Yeah,
I mean, we talked about St. Louis and kind of some goaltending perhaps issues there, but Binnington's kind of turned it around a bit. I dropped him, I think, last week in one of my fantasy pools, and I actually picked him up again against that game against Colorado yesterday. But man, he played lights out in that game, and he's looked good. But St. Louis has kind of decided they want to start scoring again, have won three in a row, which is something that's necessary, because before that they were 3-8.
Yeah, they were bottom of the league again. So I guess it's time to start planning a cup parade, really.
Yeah. Yeah, O'Reilly started to get some points. I think he got like a couple assists or something, and Robert Thomas got a goal, which is not like him. So yeah, they are still at the bottom of the Central, so potentially could potentially still see a Tarasenko trade to the Oilers, which I think would be really cool, as we talked about last episode. But yeah, that Central is weird.
We'll just have to make sure Ken Holland watches or listens to our last episode before he goes and tries to trade for O'Reilly or Jonathan Toews.
Yeah, well, how many second round picks does he have left?
So
That'll dictate how many trades he can make.
The Oilers don't have a second round pick until 2077.
Cyberpunk 2077 Ken Holland edition. I don't know. There's a lot of teams that are kind of dealing with goalie issues, like one of them being Toronto. You know, Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov were both hurt. I think they're both supposed to come back. Murray played tonight, got the win, so that must feel good for him. Another team that's going through goalie issues is Columbus. They've got Merzlikins hurt tonight. He didn't play a single game last week. I think Korpisalo made all three starts. And both their numbers are real bad. And Columbus in general, I think, is just real bad and even worse off now because Zach Werenski's done for the season. I think Jake Bean got hurt, and he was kind of replacing Werenski on the power play. Patrick Laine got hurt. He's like out for like 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, so right now, like, Columbus brutal. Is second worst in the league, ahead of only the Anaheim Ducks, I believe.
Rough.
And
real light at the end of the tunnel for them.
Actually, they're tied with Anaheim, but they have one less game played, so they have a slightly higher points percentage.
Yeah.
But same thing remains. I mean, 9 points in 14 games for Columbus. Like you said, their goaltending's been a bit of an issue through the season. Elvis has been hurt a couple of times now, I think, off and on. And Korpisalo was hurt until very recently, so they're running third, fourth stringers. Their offense has been non-existent. Like, that Johnny Gaudreau signing was... it was a lot of money to begin with, and then they start the season. He starts the season like he has, and... I mean, 12 points in 14 games, he's doing okay now. But I think there was a stretch right at the beginning where he didn't really have any offensive side to his game. He was still trying to adjust to the team.
Yeah, they have scored the lowest... Oh, no, Philly actually has scored less goals in even more games. They're down there for sure for the low goal totals in the league.
Yeah, bottom five. St. Louis has the least, it looks like.
Yeah.
St. Louis, Chicago, Philly, and Columbus are all mid-30s.
Brutal. In about 14, 15 games played. But
yeah,
it's, it's really not looking too positive for them moving forward, but those injuries, like... And then Voracek's out. I think he's been out, like, almost all season as well. That random guy that you picked up in our fantasy team, Nick Blankenberg or whatever his name is, he got hurt. So I think they're trying to compete with Washington for just, like, most man games lost this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just, I don't know, they're up shit creek without a paddle with just the roster that they have already and then the injuries that they have. So
yeah,
it's too bad, but that, I mean, it is what it is.
It looks like they've already iced 30 different players this season.
Rough.
Which I feel like is a lot, but I don't have much of a reference point on that. But there is a lot of people with like 1, 2, 3 games here. So
yeah, I mean, like some teams are starting to kind of find out that they're not going to be a playoff team. And I don't know if Columbus has really said that they're willing to sell anybody off, but some other teams have. And one of them is San Jose. And they have said that they're going to be fielding trade offers for William Karlsson. Or not Eric. William Karlsson, Erik Karlsson.
imagine the rivalry between San Jose and Vegas getting better when San Jose Karlsson is trading Vegas' players away.
I mean, that's how bad Karlsson was the last few years, that he's not the most well-known Karlsson in the league.
Which is telling because William Karlsson hasn't been that great the last couple seasons either.
No. So, Erik Karlsson.
Wait. Is this what happened? Is this why Evgeny Dadonov's trade got voided? Someone else tried to trade him from Vegas?
Maybe. Yeah, just a team that doesn't even have him. I mean, like, Karlsson's just been having a outstanding start to the season. He's been a factor on, like, an absolutely absurd percentage of the Sharks' goals. I think it's, like, 50% or something. He is...
just under 50.
Apparently on the market. But it's gonna be interesting because I don't know. I'm not super well versed in like how the retention of salary works. But he's at what, like $11.5 million until 2027.
Yeah, I think five more seasons, whatever. At $11.5 million.
So even half of that is a pretty big pill to swallow.
Yeah.
And with that much term left, like, that's going to be a big trade.
That much term on a 32-year-old, frequently injured defender who has had, like, the last 3 to 4 seasons of frequent injuries and underperformance and in and out of the lineup. I feel bad for whatever team takes him.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I wanted to ask you. It's just who would even be in the market for him, even at 50, if that's possible, at that high of a salary.
I honestly I feel like this would be a perfect, another crappy move by the Canucks to try and fix their defense to go after Erik Karlsson. But no, there's no way. Like, there's no way he would fit in Vancouver. There's no need for that. But like, I'm trying to think. Like, you know, does Seattle want a bigger name player? I don't see where they would particularly find a lot of use. But like, maybe they want some power play boost. Maybe they want a bigger name guy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they do another like a 3-way trade. Another team takes even more of the cap.
Yeah, I mean, Arizona is pretty willing to take on random cap space for draft picks. So like, you know, does San Jose retain, I don't know, I'm not well versed in the maximum retention, but like, you know, retain a third, Arizona retains a third, and then you got Karlsson at like $4 million.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what the maximum is,
like,
on that,
even
though.
like 8 isn't too bad, but like, there's still a lot of length on that contract. But
yeah,
I mean Ottawa's in the market, so.
Yeah, Ottawa is very, very, very strongly and obviously in the market for a defender, especially depending on how long Thomas Chabot is out, because that was the thing. He got injured over the weekend.
Well, they need someone on the right side, too. So,
could be. Oh, wait, I completely blanked for a second on the Ottawa thing.
What?
I blanked for a second on the Karlsson back to Ottawa, yeah. I was just like trying to think of the team or the roster as a thing rather than like, oh, Erik Karlsson back to the Senators.
No, I mean, baby, come back. I mean, there's some Ottawa fans that have been commenting on stuff that would be like, you know, they'd get him for less than they sold him for. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It's pretty risky with his injury history and just, you know, like, he's good now, but he's just like another injury away from missing the entire season. And
yeah, you know, after four bad seasons, is 20 good games enough to sway a team back to thinking this is now his norm again? Because it's like, anyone can have a good 20 games. It's the consistency over the last few years of he's been constantly injured and underperforming and invisible.
Yeah, I don't see a team wanting to take a risk on him unless, like, a massive amount of that cap hit gets eaten up by two teams or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's a lot of money. I mean, does a team want to propel themselves into, like, contender status that bad? Like Buffalo or Detroit or someone? I don't know. I don't think there's a real big market for him.
Okay, it looks like the percentage retained cannot exceed 50%.
I knew that. I just didn't know if there was, like, a dollar amount as well, because it's, like, $11.5 million cap hit. It seems like a lot to retain, like, almost $6 million.
But I don't see... Is that... okay, yeah. I was going to say, like, I don't see, can one team retain 50 and another team retain 50, so it's 75 total, but it looks like it's just a straight 50%. So, like, two teams eat 25% each or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think a team is really going to...
No. Although... On him. I mean, this would be a terrible solution to a, you know, what's ultimately a short-term problem. Columbus. As we talk about their number one right defender and power play guy getting injured and their replacement getting injured shortly after, suddenly they have an opening.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But that's a five-year solution to a one-year problem, so that's not a very smart one.
Yeah, I mean, he would then supplant Eric Goodbranson as the highest paid roster defender.
Which is probably for the best.
I mean, that's where they're at right now. He is the highest paid defenseman on that team right now with Werenski out. So that is, that should tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Bad. And then, yeah, the Vancouver Canucks have also, apparently there's a rumor going around that they want to ship out Oliver Ekman-Larsson, which I don't think would be a surprise. Like, he hasn't been... good, and what I don't know why they expected him to be good.
Yeah, he has been exactly as expected, and the organization seems surprised.
Yeah. Oh no, the consequences of our actions. I guess
somewhere you've got Patrick Alvin like staring off into the sunset or staring off at the moon, like yelling at Jim Benning.
Yeah. But yeah, he has a no movement clause, and apparently he's not willing to waive it. And I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Because where are they going to send him? Arizona?
Yeah. Like, that's no the thing. You know, you've got your big money deal. It's like, why? I don't feel like moving again.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's like, you traded for me like two seasons ago. Now you want to send me again? Like, I have this no movement clause for a reason.
I mean, like, sure, he is overpaid, but like, it's not his fault. He's not like a gigantic liability out there. He's not like contributing to the amount that his salary would suggest he should be, but he's not like the worst hockey player, right? And it's like, it's not any particular one player's fault the way they're doing things or the way that they're competing. But like, what would they even want for him? Like, at this point, they'd be better off to just sell off like JT Miller or Brock Besser or somebody like Bo Horvat.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Horvat...
get some picks and prospects.
Yeah. Like, Horvat's pretty... It seems like the writing's on the wall for Bo Horvat. That this is going to be the end of his time in Vancouver. Right? After, you know, it's his contract year. He's got 13 goals and 17 points in 16 games. So he's clearly playing for a big contract. Vancouver can't afford it, and it seems like Horvat... based off of some of his comments, was kind of like done with the, you know, the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that they'd be pretty smart to trade off what they can this season.
So, you know.
Suck hard for Bedard. Get the hometown guy. Have him come in, play with Pettersson. Quinn Hughes. There you go. And also, don't scratch Kuzmenko.
Yeah, that one was weird because, you know, he's actually been decent. Like, why is Kuzmenko getting scratched instead of, what was it, Hoglander?
Guy had 11 points in 14 games. Sure, a lot of that came in two games, but still, he has unbelievable chemistry with Pettersson. He was making things happen on the power play. Why scratch him? He's not the problem.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're going to scratch a guy for, like, any sort of defensive lapses or anything, it should be JT Miller.
Yeah, no
not
kidding.
Not Kuzmenko. Like, come on. I don't know if you saw, and it's probably not, like, big, big news, but, like, today it was announced that Jack Studnicka is on IR. So the Canucks just can't get any help. Like, they bring in guys to fill out the roster, and then they get hurt. So they're perhaps not as injury hit in big names as, like, the Capitals and the Columbus is, but they're bottom six. And
they're already
and
crappy.
Depth defensemen
getting
are
wrecked.
Just always just, they're just getting destroyed, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're a weird team.
Yeah, well, like, did you see some of the, I don't know, weird, ominous tweets or messages about, like, Boudreaux being on the hot seat now?
Yeah, I saw, like, Elliot Friedman thinks it's a matter of when, not if, mm-hmm. and, like, just, and then there was, like, some other Vancouver people who were saying, like, time to use some dynamite on this roster, and,
well, that's just
today,
normal Vancouver media stuff.
I haven't seen it, but my friend texted me today that apparently it would be Rick Tocchet that would be coming in.
Oh, no.
Which I don't think would work particularly well with, the roster.
Like, okay, I get the logic, like, oh, you're defensively shitty roster, so bring in a defensively minded coach to, like, fix it, but you kind of need defensively responsible players to do that. The Canucks don't have who's the Canucks' best defensive defender? Tyler Myers? Maybe it's Ethan Bear now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, they don't have a single...
Luke Shen, probably.
Yeah, maybe, actually. But, like, their roster is offensive. So, like, I get wanting to bring in, like, a defensive-minded coach to teach them defense and, like, how to play that, but that seems like a mismatch waiting to happen.
Yeah, and also, like, I wonder how, like, Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Garland would feel about, like, having Tocchet back.
Oh, yeah.
It's also, like, the Pittsburgh connection, right? It's, like...
Oh, good point.
It would make sense for them to, like, bring back their guy because he was an assistant there for, I think, quite a while.
Yeah, so the, you know, Rutherford and I think Alvin was from Pittsburgh too, right?
I think so, yeah.
Penguins, yeah.
So it's, like, just
of course they're going to stick with their guy. And,
I don't know. It's,
I don't like that, but, you know, let's see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Boudreaux came in and he was able to kind of, like, get the offensive players going, but I mean, I don't know. People have been saying, like, they'd play with, like, no system and stuff, and it's like, well, you realize that, like, not having a system is also kind of a system in its own, but maybe the players aren't playing the system. Like, maybe that's the issue. They're not listening to the coach. I highly doubt that an NHL head coach doesn't have a system. How would you get hired? Just being like, you know what? We're going to roll lines. We're going to see what happens.
Yeah. How's that, like, interview going to go?
It's like, not happening.
You know, most coaches show up. They probably have, like, a binder of strategies and, like, team-specific stuff and, like, how they're going to utilize each player. What's Boudreaux do? Show up and, like, yeah, I'll just toss some guys on the ice and see what happens. Like, you're not going to get the job.
No, I just think it's a matter of, you know, he wasn't hired by the new regime, and they want to bring in their own guy.
Yeah.
And they don't
like
what's
happening.
And that's
a normal thing.
And that's normal, yeah. I just don't think it should be Rick Tocchet. Like, that just doesn't seem like it's... Don't turn that team into a defensive team. Like, I just, since that happened to Ovechkin, it's like, don't do that. Like,
yeah, don't stifle the guys.
Yeah, like, you're not going to turn JT Miller into, like, a Selke winner. Like, just try to make him a little bit better so that he's not giving one-timer passes to Kirby Dach in the defensive zone. Like, you know, like...
JT Miller to
Don't
Montreal
play him
confirmed.
As center because he sucks at center. Play him as wing. He can't play center. Make him take draws, whatever. But yeah, it's a weird team, and you know, this is kind of the thing that happens when you fuck yourself over with the cap. Like, you've just put yourself in the situation. Hindsight again, 2020. You should have just let all those contracts expire. The Roussel, Beagle, Louis Eriksson, and then just get out of it. And then, you know, you would have had money to re-sign some people that you should have kept, and you would have had money to re-sign Horvat, you know, this season. But you pulled the ripcord and did that deal, and
yeah, you made.
Now you got 7.2 on the books for, you know, four more whole seasons after this.
Yeah, like, we've trashed Benning a lot for that particular move, but it's, you know, it's, again, it's worth noting that, like, that is the reason the Canucks are so strapped, and that's why they can't go out and find the defenseman they need. That's why they're so stuck with the players they have. Because instead of that $7 million that they had tied up in, you know, in Roussel and Eriksson and whoever else that was,
and
now they're stuck with $7.2 million on Ekman Larson, or a bit less than that, I think, on Ekman Larson for 5 more years instead of it all expiring a couple seasons ago.
Yeah. Another thing is that Thatcher Demko has not been playing, like, god-tier, out-of-his-mind hockey.
Yeah, and that's really showing the holes in the Canucks roster, because he kept them in so many games last season.
Yeah. They relied on Demko, and they relied on Markstrom beforehand, and it's like, you know, if you have an unreal goalie, he can keep you in games, but if he falls back to average or below average even, like, you know, you're going to lose a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what's happening here, is that the Canucks have never had to have, like, exceptionally good defense because their goaltender could bail them out.
Yeah, because it went...
Grade A scoring chances, their goalie could make a save most of the time.
Yep.
And,
you know, they had Demko for a couple seasons, then it was Markstrom for a bit before that, then Luongo before that, and then... You know, he was there for so long that it's like, I can't even remember who was before. Was that Dan Cloutier before?
Probably, yeah. Like Cloutier and Felix the Cat.
Alex Ald was in there, but I think he was a backup to Luongo.
Corey Schneider, of course.
Schneider,
a little bit. The goalie controversy. But yeah, anyway, like, they've never been an exceptionally good defensive team. Like, you know, the best defenseman that they had, Chris Tanev.
They let him walk.
They let him go. Like, how good would he look on this roster playing with Hughes?
Oh, he'd be the exact thing. It'd be the, you know, the Mathot like, to the Carlson type thing, right?
Exactly, you know? But again, hindsight, you know, you never know. But, those defensive type players, like, they have a spot on the roster, and, they fill a definite need. You good?
Yep, I hit the wrong button.
Oh, okay.
Got me all over the place. Okay, we get.
You know, like, those defensive guys, like, some people, when they sign those deals, they're like, oh, look at his numbers. This guy sucks. Like, Chris Tanev doesn't put up any numbers. He doesn't put up any points.
It's like okay.
Yeah, but think of all the shit he shuts down out there. And
yeah.
Like, you know, look at his plus minus. Like, yes, that's not, like, the be-all, end-all of stats, but, like, he has not once in his career been, he's one time in 2015-16, he was minus -8. But other than that, he has been a 0 or above player. And he's solid. He's just solid defensively. And, you know, there is advanced stats for defense and things, but if you don't watch that guy, like, and just look at the little things that they do, like, I mean, last night, Calgary had a 1-goal lead against LA kind of in the last seconds, but Tanev had like a super clutch block where he was like rushed out and put his stick out and blocked a shot and rolled up his stick and went out of play. And it's like, that's the sort of thing he gets paid for. Mm-hmm. Like that's he earns his money by doing that sort of stuff. And he did that for a long time in Vancouver. And, you know, part of that is he gets hurt. And then people are like, oh, the guy's injury prone. He's never in the lineup. And
it's like, yeah, because he stands in front of shots like, and yeah, eats shots all game.
He eats blocks when, you know, a Quinn Hughes type makes a turnover or makes a dumb play. And yeah, he's there to bail him out.
It's, when JT Miller exactly... feeds Kirby Doc for a one-timer in the slot, yeah. You've got Chris Tanev there to block it.
It is exactly that Mark Methot type player, right? It's like he's reliable. He's there. He's gonna be there. He's stay at home, you know. Sure, you might get like 20 points or whatever in a good season, but that's not what he's there for.
Yeah.
And they don't have anyone like that. Like, Luke Shen is kind of their version of that, but Luke Shen is just there to like play the body and, you know.
Great for peripherals, but he's not the greatest like contributor on the ice.
In, he's like, actually been, I think, he actually has 7 points in 16 games.
That's pretty impressive. It's a lot more than I thought.
Yeah, he's actually been pretty solid, but I think he's like the hit leader of the NHL right now. But no, he's probably that guy. But he's not as good as like shutting things down as like Chris Tanev would be. But yeah, anyway, like they just, it's no one player's fault, but something's got to change there. And I think that they need to realize that like they missed their chance for the rebuild, and they got to do something because they're at the bottom, like it or not. And if they want that to change, they've got to start thinking about not just this season, right? Like,
yeah, they have. They're stuck. Like, do you remember 5 to 10 years ago, Calgary was in that perpetual mediocrity where it's like they were always 8th seed or like 1 or 2 points out of the playoffs, and they just would never find a way to be better or find a way to be worse. They're mm-hmm. just stuck in perpetual mediocrity. Like, Vancouver's in that spot, but they're like worse than mediocre. They're perpetually bad enough to be well out of the playoffs, but they're not bad enough to be like rebuilding. And it's really, they're just stuck because they keep getting these like big money players. They've got all their cap tied up in these players all the time, and they can never, obviously no one's going to take a lot of these players off of their hands to get any you know, anything valuable back. And they can't get the picks, they can't get the prospects, they're not bad enough to get the high draft picks, their high draft picks aren't panning out as well as they would have hoped. Like, they're just stuck.
They have had some pretty bad luck with the lotteries too, but yeah, you know, so did Detroit had like a historically bad team and they lost the lottery. So and look at where they're at. Like, you know, they're kind of on the upswing now. Whereas Vancouver is like not.
Vancouver is just there. They don't even have a swing. They're just sitting.
So yeah, I think you know, part of it is just management, and you know, it's kind of too early to tell with like the Rutherford Alvin show, but I mean, I think like giving Ilya Mikheyev like 4.7 isn't a strong start to their tenure as, you know, leadership, but
yeah,
we will see. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation that they're going to try and work their way out of, but I don't know, man, if they don't get Bedard, they're going to be stuck for a while. And yeah, have you heard of any other teams that are kind of on the seller's market? I would think Anaheim would be.
Anaheim kind of sold last year. Do they have anything left to sell?
Klingberg,
I guess. Maybe Gibson, but I can't see a team wanting to take him. He's too like injured and not very good right now.
Yeah, they maybe Adam Henrik.
Yeah, Henrik and Silverberg.
Yeah. But other than that, not too much. What else do we want to talk about?
trying to think, but I can't remember. I think that was basically all the main stuff.
I guess just a quick shout out to Sedin Twins and Luongo and Daniel Alfredson for entering the Hall of Fame as NHL players.
Yeah, that's quite the Hall of Fame class. Three, as we're sitting here like trashing the Canucks for the last 20 minutes, three Canucks, three people who are like best identified as Canucks or had some of their best years in, like, Luongo had some of his best years in Vancouver. Sedin's obviously their whole career's there. All get into the Hall of Fame at once. Which, yeah, I guess, really too, cool. Is a testament to how good, you know, the early 2010s Vancouver Canucks, you know, they were one of the best teams of the last, you know, few decades, probably.
They had probably one of the best teams, like, of all time in the NHL, and especially in the salary cap era. Like, that President's Trophy winning team was just insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, the Sedins were just disgusting.
Yeah, this was the peak of their career. So, like, to get three people off of that roster in the Hall of Fame all at once, like, that's a testament to the strength of that roster.
Absolutely. And I should also say Riikka Salonen, Finnish ladies hockey player, enters the Hall of Fame as, I think, the first non-North American female hockey player to enter the Hall of Fame. And then Herb Carnegie, who was one of the first black players in the NHL, and apparently was a bit like the first black superstar in the NHL, also made it in. So congrats to that Hall of Fame class. Pretty cool. And yeah, the Players Tribune, Eric Carlson wrote an article about Daniel Alfredson and just how much, how happy he was. Apparently they were together when they found out he was going to be inducted. And just a really cool relationship between those guys. You know, the passing of the torch between the captaincy between them in Ottawa. Really cool. Really cool article.
Carnegie never actually made it to the NHL.
Hmm.
He was given a tryout with the Rangers and got an offer to play with the Rangers minor league team, but no guarantee of ever making the NHL, so he stayed in Quebec. And then, you know, there's that... Yeah, and then there's something to do with Conn Smythe as well. I'm trying to find that, but... Yeah, he never got a chance in the NHL, and obviously, like, it was a result of racism. And yeah, he's kind of one of the one of the main trailblazers, and it was always, you know, the last 5-10 years, it was always like campaign to give him the recognition that he deserved for what he represented to the sport, what he represented to, you know, inclusion in hockey and in the NHL. So it was really great to see. And his daughter, I believe, gave an amazing speech. Yeah. His granddaughter gave an amazing speech to accept the induction, I think.
Yeah, because he's dead, so the award was posthumous. But yeah, it says on his induction card, like, the best black hockey player to never make the NHL. So, you know, pretty cool to recognize, you know, all the work that came into breaking down the color barrier. Very cool. So congrats to that class. And then they had, like, a Hall of Fame game, and Luongo played center.
Did they give him the captaincy for it? Just as a yeah, that would've been funny. Just as a shout out.
Yeah. Apparently he scored a couple goals. But yeah, cool.
Is he gonna make a comeback? Will he try out for a team this summer and see if he can play center instead of goalie?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, the Sedins had cool speeches too, where they were talking about you know, just kind of razzing each other about who's the better player. And then some of their interviews are pretty funny, where they were talking about just, you know, playing together and there was an article on the NHL.com about all four of those NHL players never won the cup, but all of them also won Olympic gold. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about just what the cup meant. And the Sedins were saying, like, entering the Hall of Fame is one, like, probably the most, I don't know, the most impressive single player thing you can do. But they were always team first guys, and they really wish that they would have won a cup.
Yeah.
Because they're team first guys.
Oh, of course.
And it's just so hard to win. You know, like, you don't control who you get drafted by, and this is what I was saying in the article. You don't control who you get drafted by. You know, you can sign as a free agent in places, but you don't have control over the roster, or, you know, so many things. So it's just so hard to be put in that situation to win. And
yeah,
all of them went to the finals and they all lost. So it's kind of a neat through line for the NHL side of things for the Hall of Fame class.
That, yeah, because similarities. You always hear, like, oh, he doesn't have a cup, so it's like he can't make the Hall of Fame. Well, okay, well, Hall of Fame's a team achievement, the cup is a team achievement, pardon me, and the Hall of Fame is an individual accomplishment. So, like, recognize the player for their hockey career, because hockey success isn't just in the NHL winning the cup. It's also, like you said, Olympic gold, international achievements.
Yeah,
you know, work for the game of hockey. So, like, it's a good testament to the different paths people can take to have, you know, a career worth that great recognition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more than just, oh, they were on a cup team. Like, so what? A lot of people won the cup, but they're not all in the Hall of Fame. You know, like, Christian Juice was on the Capitals team that won the cup. I don't think he's going to enter the Hall of Fame unless he does something amazing while playing in, like, the Swiss Hockey League. Like, you know, it's not the only metric.
Mm-hmm.
It's important, you know, like, if you win multiple cups, maybe, but of those Penguins teams, or of this Tampa Bay Lightning team, will there be guys who end up in the Hall of Fame? Sure, but not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like Crosby, Malkin,
Letang,
maybe Letang,
more Fleury,
maybe Fleury.
I think Fleury's a lock. He's got everything, especially now that he got the Vezina.
Yeah, and then Kucherov, Stamkos, Hedman, Fazzy,
Vasilevsky, of course.
Other than that, though, like, you know, there are only three or four guys on each team.
Yeah,
but not the entire roster of skaters and goalies.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media, or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.